Now, The Deepest Breath tells the story of the bond between a promising young Italian freediver, Alessia Zacchini, and her Irish safety diver, Stephen Keenan. Last week, the freediving documentary won the Outstanding Long Documentary at the Emmy Sports Ceremony in New York City. It was directed by Irish filmmaker Laura McGann. And Laura joins us now on the line. Good afternoon and congratulations, Laura McGann.
Hi, Ray. How are you? Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Wowee, it's just success after success. Well deserved. It's an amazing documentary. It's spectacularly good.
Thank you. Well, it's an amazing story. You know, it's an amazing world that that Alessia and Stephen kind of lived in. So it was really an incredible world to have the opportunity to make a film in.
Mm. When you meet people and they ask you, what do you do for a living? And how do you describe the documentary to them?
I try to avoid the question, first of all, because it just gets me into a whole spiel. When people ask if they, you know, because a lot of people at this point have watched it, so it's actually quite cool when people ask and then say, "Oh, we made Deep Breath," and they're like, "Oh my God, I love that film!" Like it's not something you really ever expect when you start making, you know, having a little idea for a documentary. So that's been really cool. But to describe it to people, I usually start by describing what freediving is, because it's what I had to Google it, you know, initially, what is freediving, and you basically say, like, it's a film about freediving, two amazing freedivers, and freediving is where you hold your breath and you dive down as deep as you can go into the ocean. Yeah. And it's a love story, and it's a film that has a message about life and seizing the day and kind of going for it. You know, it's a film about going for it and enjoying it. And sometimes, you know, there are dangers involved, but there's a lot of joy in it as well.
So where did the little idea come from?
Well, actually, I read about the accident, Stephen's accident, in the Irish Times a couple of days after it happened. And I like the sea and I'm into it. And so I thought, what is freediving? So I did Google it, and I spent hours watching these videos online of people just under the water, way down under the water for ages. You know, these like two and a half minute videos, no cuts. Just somebody swimming under the water holding their breath. And the colours were amazing. The light was amazing. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. Really, really was. And I initially thought, God, this would be incredible. Imagine seeing this on the big screen. And then I started to look into kind of what happened with Stephen. And a friend of Stephen's had posted this gorgeous photo essay all about him. Online, and I thought, oh God, there seems to be something about this guy. Like, this is really, like, he seems to have really impacted people's lives, and there's an awful lot of love for him out there. So I got in touch with the person who, the photographer who had posted this photo essay, and he put me in touch with someone else, and she put me in touch with somebody else, and it really just went from there. And I spent 6 months just chatting to different friends of Stephen's, you know, from all around the world. And then eventually Peter, his dad, got in touch with me, I think, actually, and said, oh, I heard you were speaking to such and such, you know, in the Netherlands or in Africa or in Egypt or something. And I said, yeah. He said, come on, we should meet for a cup of tea. And it turned out he lived across the road from me in Dunleary. So it went from there. He gave me... Stephen had been recording interviews with a producer who was a producer in RTE, and Micheál O'Sullivan, God, that's the musician. I'll think of his second name in a minute, but he recorded about 15 hours of audio with Stephen. So really, I sat down and got to listen to Stephen in his own words tell his own story. Yeah. And that was the point where I thought, maybe, like, this is the one piece of material that you wouldn't be able to recreate, obviously, for Stephen to actually tell his own story.
His dad's remembering his son is so beautiful. And you obviously developed a relationship with Peter, Stephen's dad. He trusted you, which is hugely important when you're making documentaries and you're asking people to open up about very sad parts of their lives. But you had all that footage, and Stephen was this, and you alluded to it at the beginning there, he wanted to live life to its fullest. So he'd been he'd been around the world before all this.
Yeah. And I mean, that it was something that Peter said to me really, really early on that kind of framed how I approached the whole film, which was that Stephen had lived like more than some 8-year-olds had lived. You know, he was 39 when he died, but he had lived like such an incredibly rich life. And that made it possible to kind of like, that's how I approached it. Not as like, obviously it's a really sad ending. It's really awful, but there's an awful lot about Stephen's life to celebrate. And I really leaned into that, because it felt right, even looking at the way Stephen approached life, the way he approached traveling to, you know, really remote parts of Africa. And he used to say, like, the worse the road going in somewhere, the kinder the people would be at the end of the road. You know, he really had, he didn't live in fear. And that's the kind of story that, that's the way I wanted to approach the story, not as a, like, cautionary tale, but as one of kind of exploration and
so there's
joy.
There's his story, and then in parallel throughout the beginning, the first two thirds of the documentary, you're telling the story of this Italian free diver, Alessia Zecchini, who wanted to do it from a very young age.
Yeah. Well, like, Alessia, in a whole other way, inspired me. Just as, you know, she had this fire in her belly from like 13, and she spent years squirreling away, even when she was kind of not allowed to compete because she was too young, just building this picture of what she could do in her life, and this dream that she had that somebody else had done, but they were in Russia and they were older, you know, Natalia Maltinova, and she was kind of been told, look, you really shouldn't be doing this, and anyway, you're too young, and anyway, you're a girl, and most people are, you know, in the freediving world in Italy, because there is one. You know, in local pools in Italy, they teach freediving. It's a thing. Obviously, it's not a thing here. But, yeah, people are quite surprised to know that, yeah, you can just go for freediving lessons.
So what they do is, just to tell people who haven't seen the documentary, in the pools in Italy, they get in and you have a very large fin, mermaid-like, and you go under the water and you see how long you can go up and down the pool. And in the documentary, it shows Alessia on one of her first outings into the pool break the record, and everybody's just standing watching, dumbfounded at this young teenager and her ability.
Yeah, and usually, like, at that time, it was all kind of middle-aged men, older men who would be doing this sport, and she turned up as a 13-year-old girl, and with her monofin, is what it's called, or else you can do it with bifins, just the two fins as well, or you can now do it with no fins at all. So there's all different disciplines. But yeah, that's what it is. You're just swimming lengths, but you're not coming up for air, basically.
And then when you go into the sea, you just go down vertically as far as you can. We see Alessia at the World Championships in the Bahamas, in the Big Blue. Is that what it's called? Sorry, not the Big Blue. It's not called the
Dean's Blue Hole.
Yes, right.
Where the one in the Bahamas, yeah.
And that's a big competition between herself and a Japanese lady, and they're trying to outdo each other, 100 metres, 101 metres, 102 metres, and then eventually. The thing that strikes me, and you were living with, you were in this world doing, talking to people. Why do people do it? I know that seems like an odd, you know, ridiculously simple question, but it's huge. I've asked people who climb Mount Everest, why do you do it? I still haven't got a satisfactory answer.
Like, I know, nobody's satisfied with whenever I answer this question. Nobody's so prepared to be not satisfied
right,
again. Because
<okay,
right. laughs> everyone who wants to, well, why do they do it? I'm like, can you not see the joy? So basically, right, like, it's really like euphoric. You hold your breath. You get to kind of be a seal. It's like getting to be a bird, you know, except for you get to be a fish. You hold your breath. Basically, one of the free divers puts it really well. He says you put your face in the water, you're holding your breath, and all the shit from daily life just fades away. Yeah, all the stress, all the niggly thoughts, everything just goes quiet.
Well, yeah, like, I know, but he omits to mention that you might die at the end of it. You know, that's a real possibility.
Sure. So, like, there's obviously there's a lot of risk, and what the freedivers do, like, they're adults, they know what they're getting into, and they also do their best to mitigate those risks. So at competitions, you know, they've safety divers that go down to about 30 meters. Really, you wouldn't think it, but the more dangerous part is when you're almost back up, not when you're down the deepest, because your lungs have shrunk and they begin to expand, and your brain realizes that you haven't got that much oxygen in your system.
Yeah, so 99% of the accidents happen in the last 10 metres. That's a statistic from the...
Yeah,
So Stephen, exactly. Stephen was dabbling in this in a place called Dahab. Is it Dahab in Egypt, which is one of the centres that has this big hole that is very close to the beach? So within sort of 10 metres or so, you're there. And there's an archway that you can swim under, which is a big attraction for free divers. And then he had sort of an accident on the way back up. He had a blackout, and he decided then to go into safety, and he became probably one of the best known safety free divers in the world. He saved a world champion, ended up then doing safety on the world championship, and Alessia was there, and that's where they met. Like, it's like a movie, isn't it? I know it's a documentary movie, but it is like a script from a movie. How they and that's why you told it so brilliantly as a writer director.
Well, because I just thought the story was so incredible. Like you're saying, there was these unbelievable, like, beats of story where, you know, Stephen saves Alexei Molchanov, the male world champion, who's Natalia Molchanov's son. Natalia Molchanov is Alessia's hero, has been since he's 13. So, you could just see, as I was, like, looking at the story, as I was figuring it all out, chatting to people, I was seeing these, like, okay, drawing a line from here to here, going, look, their paths are already starting to cross before they even meet. And it just played out like that. And as we kind of realised that there was an amazing story here, we just wanted to be able to tell it in the moment, not retrospectively. So the challenge was to find the archive. Was anybody there? Did anyone shoot this thing where it was this scene where Stephen saved Alexei? It was like 2015 in Greece, and we had to find the guy who organized the competition. And then he was really hard to kind of, he'd go off and you wouldn't hear from him for months. And eventually one of our producers had to go and actually do a freediving lesson with him to get a hold of him.
Right.
To then go and look in the drive, and he found the footage, and there was the footage of Stephen saving Alexei. And it's this era where everything has been filmed, and the freediving, kind of like, you know, skateboarding or snowboarding, it's a niche sport. You've got tons of people with GoPro cameras, and there's tons of these films kind of waiting to be made, probably, you know, that are in people's wardrobes.
Both Alessia and Stephen passionate about freediving, and it was sort of written in the stars, I suppose, that they were going to meet. And it looks to me, from the depiction in the documentary, that they fall madly in love quite, you know, like, immediately, nearly.
Yeah, well, it certainly, you know, it certainly was like that. And it, you know, everything is more complicated, of course, in real life, and especially after what happened, you know. It was all very early days, and people didn't actually know that, you know, that there had been a romantic element for a while. So it was hard to kind of talk about, but it was it was really special. And we hear it all from Alessia, and it kind of, I suppose, it makes it all the kind of the more tragic, because, you know, we do see that Stephen's kind of looking for, you know, that person, that someone to kind of share his life with. And you feel like it's just all come together for him before the accident happened. So it just makes it all the more tragic.
So Stephen's dad, Peter, How did he react to the documentary winning a sports Emmy?
Peter just kind of laughs now, you know, because we when we met for that cup of tea initially, you know, and then a few months later, he was like, Laura, you know, if you don't manage to get this film off the ground, like, it's not like my dying wish that I want this film to be made about Stephen. And I was like, oh, well, you know, hopefully I think we might actually get it off the ground. So, you know, but I appreciate you not putting pressure on me. That sounds, and so, like, you know, when it then goes on to, like, it was in Sundance and then it was on Netflix, and there was lots of kind of moments throughout the last kind of year and a half which were kind of pinch me moments for all of us, that Peter just kind of gives me a buzz, or I give him a buzz, and we just laugh, you know, at how bizarre it all is.
And you didn't make it to the Emmys.
I didn't go. We have a 6-month-old little baby and a 3-month-old little toddler.
A 6-month-old and a 3-month-old? No, a 3-year.
Three years, yes. Six months. Sorry. I'm tired, Ray. I don't have
I know.
So, no, I was
at least I'm
woken
playing.
Up by...
You know I'm paying attention anyway. Go on.
I know, thanks. At least someone is. yeah, no, I didn't go because there's been a lot of travelling in the last year or so, and so I had to be at home. So yeah. Our two of our producers went, Anne McLaughlin and Sarah Thompson. So I woke up in the middle of the night. I was woken by the 3-year-old, and I looked at my phone and I saw that we won an Emmy. And then I went back to sleep.
Life takes over. Life takes over.
It does. Well,
listen, lovely talking to you, Laura. And I know you're working on a new project, which you can't talk about, but we'd love to talk to you when that comes out. And congratulations again on winning the Emmy Sports Award for The Deepest Breath. And if you haven't seen it, highly recommend it from here. Thanks, Laura.